February is often thought of as the season of love, right? It's known for Valentine's Day. My grandparents were one couple of many that chose Valentine's Day for the day they got married. It's probably so my grandfather wouldn't forget the anniversary. Other couples will celebrate the holiday with gifts of flowers or candy or romantic dinners. You know, there are a lot of synonyms for love, such as affection, adoration, compassion, tenderness, as well as others. Two words that are often associated with love are sympathy and empathy. And for this month of February, in our morning worship services, I'd like to look into the latter of those terms as we strengthen the skill of empathy. We begin with an initial definition of empathy. We need to understand what it is. The term actually entered English from the German, Einfühlung. I'm sure my brother could say it better than that. Literally, that means feeling into. Empathy is the intellectual identification of the thoughts, feelings, or state of another person. It's being able to look at somebody else and to somehow understand or at least enter into their experience of what they're thinking and what they're feeling and what they're experiencing. It's described by one resource this way: it is as though we are in the driver's seat of the other person, feeling and sensing with him. It is viewing the situation through his eyes, feeling as he feels. Another defines empathy as discerning the other person's experience and interpretation from their vantage point. Now, you'll find empathy is very, very common. It's a popular word among healthcare or mental health care professionals today. We're hearing an awful lot about empathy. Christian counselor Norman Wright suggests empathy is a scriptural basic for counseling. Empathy is one of the most important commodities for effective counseling. Galatians 6:2 and Romans 12:15 admonish us to bear one another's burdens, to rejoice with those who rejoice, to weep with those who weep. To do this is to have empathy. Another passage that speaks of this is found in Hebrews 13 and verse 5. Nope, that's not right. Verse 3, had it marked down wrong. Hebrews 13 and verse 3. Remember those in prison as if you were their fellow prisoners. And for those who are mistreated, as if you yourselves were suffering. You see where that empathy comes in. You don't just acknowledge that they're suffering. You enter into that suffering with them. You treat them as if you were right there with them. That's what empathy is all about. Now, I had earlier defined empathy as an intellectual identification with the thoughts and feelings and state of another. But there's an emotional side to it as well. It isn't just an analytical, comprehension where I recognize that somebody else is going through a difficult time or some kind of suffering, but I get into that emotional sense of I feel it with them. That's the whole idea of it's feeling with, it's thinking with. Sometimes that is called affective matching or affective attunement. It's getting in tune with where they are, not only what's happening to them, but how does it affect them? How does it make them feel? We've probably all heard that phrase, you walk a mile in someone else's shoes. That's empathy. It's seeing things from their perspective. And depending on the amount of suffering they may, it might be 5 or 10 miles in their shoes. But it's not just looking at it and saying, well, I think it should be this, this, and this. You try to see how are they looking at it. Not saying it's right, not necessarily endorsing it, but when we can identify with where a person's at and how they're thinking and feeling, it's much easier to reach out to them and to actually connect with them. In fact, the person who can empathize is more likely to connect with the other person, more likely to be effective in helping them. The late Bruce Parmenter, who spent considerable time preaching here at this church, he wrote, "Empathy may be the most powerful healing reality in any therapist." But I'd suggest it's not only for therapists. I believe every Christian can develop the skill of empathy. In fact, I believe, as we're going to see later in the message, we are instructed to do so. Now, empathy also does something for the one who is empathizing. One author put it this way, "Empathy is the plow that breaks up the hard ground of our hearts. The tenderness and compassion that follow empathy are seeds that sprout and grow until sworn enemies sometimes surrender their hatred." See, not only does empathy do something for the person I'm showing empathy to, it does something for me. It reminds me of others' pain, of others' experiences. And sometimes that's helpful in shaking me out of my own issues. We can get so caught up in what I'm experiencing and what I'm feeling and what I'm thinking, we can get very self-absorbed. But by empathizing with someone else, see, in order to walk in somebody else's shoes, you got to get out of your own. And that can be very helpful for me as well as for the person that I'm reaching out to. Tony Evans adds, "Empathy reminds us of our humanity and helps us allow for another's place in life." If you have a hard time getting out of your own head, if you find yourself dealing maybe even with some, not to get too clinical here, but some depression or just being down in the dumps, you know, you get overwhelmed with what's happening in your life, try reaching out to somebody else. Try focusing on someone else and their issues, what they're going through. Sometimes that's a good way to pull yourself out of your own. Now, I'm not suggesting that we do empathy in order to make ourselves feel better. That's not the motivation. It's just a side effect. It's a positive outgrowth of it. Maybe you've had this experience. Someone treated you very rudely, and your reaction was kind of indignant. You know, how dare they treat me like that? I didn't deserve that. What did I do? Why are they snapping my head off? I didn't do anything wrong. But then later on, you find out that someone close to them maybe passed away, or maybe their partner walked out on them, or maybe they lost their job. Maybe they themselves got a medical report that was less than favorable. And then you see things from a whole different light, right? It doesn't excuse their behavior, but it does go a long way to explain it. And it's a lot easier to feel for that person when you realize what they're going through, instead of just focusing on how that affected me. That's what empathy is all about. Empathy makes it easier to forgive when we have been offended. So empathy is the intellectual and emotional identification of the thoughts, the feelings, the state of another person. It's a tremendous skill for the Christian to be able to relate to and perhaps help others. At the very least, it communicates Christ's compassion and concern for another person. So that's the initial definition of what empathy is. Now I want to move on to an important distinction between empathy and another word I mentioned earlier, sympathy. They sound a lot alike, and some people might think they're the same thing, and they're not. There's an important distinction to be made here. Both words originally derived from a single Greek word, and that Greek word is pathos. Pathos, according to Webster, comes from the Greek meaning suffering, experience, or emotion. It's related to a Greek word, pasco, from which we get passion. And that initially just meant to experience something. You go through something. But eventually it became affiliated with the emotion and the feeling that accompanies that experience. And it became known as passion, or being passionate about something. And it's here that in the ancient world it took on a negative connotation. Greek psychology regarded pathos, which is an emotion implying change, to be an imperfection. They saw it as a human weakness. And it was something that should be stifled at best. In ancient Greek literature, Philo, the philosopher, used pathos some 400 times, and usually in the sense of an emotion, a feeling. And he demanded apatheia, from which we get apathy, meaning the absence of pathos, the absence of passion, the absence of emotion. The whole idea of being stoic. Remember the Stoics way back when? You know, you don't show your emotions. And for the most part, you try not to even experience them. You just shove them down. Somehow that got translated into what it means to be a man. If you're a man, you don't show your emotions. You just grin and bear it, right? And that all comes from Greek philosophy. Well, that negative connotation carried into the New Testament. Pathos is not used very much in the New Testament, and when it is, it's always bad. Paul is the only writer to use it. He used it in three occasions, Romans 1:26, Colossians 3:5, and 1 Thessalonians 4:5. In Romans, he used the term to describe homosexuality. In Colossians and 1 Thessalonians, he used it to designate erotic passion, none of which were favorable in those texts. John MacArthur defines pathos in 1 Thessalonians, which is translated passionate lust in the NIV, as uncontrollable desires, compelling feelings, or overpowering urges. Again, not very positive. And so, in the years immediately following the New Testament being written, the early church fathers used pathos to describe everything from bad temper to adultery. It was always associated with sin or something negative. Eventually, it took on the meaning of suffering or death, as you hear in the phrase of the Passion of the Christ, right? The suffering that he went through. Again, very negative. You say, well, why does that matter? I believe it matters because it goes a long way to explain why the word empathy never appears in the Bible. You get out of concordance, you look up empathy, you're not going to find anything. It's not there. Why? Because the word from which it is based was considered negative in those days. And so the New Testament writers shied away from it. In fact, where you do find the word affection, or even some newer translations will use the word sympathize, it is not pathos that is being translated. It's another Greek word, splunkna, which literally means the bowels, right? And in some of your older translations, like the King James Version, it'll speak of the bowels of compassion, and you're thinking, really? Ugh, that doesn't sound good to me. But that's where they thought the seat of the emotions were. We talk in our guts, right? Oh, I felt it in my gut. That's the idea. And in that passage that Chris read for us earlier, where Jesus sees the crowds and it says he had compassion on them. Literally in the Greek, it is he was moved in his bowels. And you think, but that is not a good mental picture. But that's how they said it back then. Now, what do we say today, especially around Valentine's Day? I love you with all my heart, right? It's not that muscle that pumps blood. It's just a way for us to express the depth of our feelings. Well, instead of heart, they use bowels. I can't understand it. That's just the way it is. My point, though, is this. The New Testament writers shied away from using the words from which we get empathize, because it, at that time, carried a negative connotation. But like the word Trinity, which also never appears in the Bible, or rapture, the concept is there, even though the word isn't. So as we do work through this over the next few weeks, you're not going to find empathy in the Bible, but you're going to find what the meaning is. And you really see that in Mark 6. Jesus had compassion on them. His heart went out to them. Now that we understand, right? We get that. His heart went out to them. Why? Because they were like sheep without a shepherd. I find it fascinating in that passage, if you go back and read through it, at the beginning, Jesus is concerned for his disciples because it says they were so busy they didn't have time to eat. He says, hey, we need to get away for a while. We need to get away from the crowds, find a quiet place where we can, you know, eat and rest and refresh. But when they go to another place, there's the crowds. And Jesus does not initially look at the crowds and say, oh, they look hungry. He looks at the crowds and says, they don't have a leader. These folks are lost. They are like sheep without a shepherd. And so what does he do initially? It says that he taught them many things. He saw their condition, he felt their condition, and then he did something about it. That's a big part of empathy. Empathy isn't just putting myself in another's shoes. It's, can I do something to help here? Now, sometimes we can't. Sometimes it's outside of our purview. And the best thing we can do is to listen and to relate. But when we can do something about it, empathy is fulfilled by meeting a need. And Jesus did that. But again, the concept here is that his heart went out to them. He could feel with them. He didn't just feel for them. That's the idea of sympathy. And it is a different kind of context. Now, you will find sympathy in some of our English Bibles, especially some of the newer ones. It appears, again, three places: Hebrews 4:15, Hebrews 10:34, and 1 Peter 3:8, where you'll see it translated sympathize or sympathetic. But the word empathia, which is the Greek form of empathy, is not used in either Testament. You say, okay, so what's the distinction? What's the difference? Empathy is the ability to understand and share the feelings of another. Sympathy is defined as feelings of pity or sorrow for someone else's misfortune. You say, well, that sounds an awful lot the same. But here's the difference. In sympathy, we are keeping ourselves separate from them. We feel bad for them. But oftentimes, what happens in sympathy is we end up looking down at them. Oh, those poor people. Oh, those poor people that don't have what I have. Right? And it's very easy for sympathy to become condescending. And that's why, especially in the mental health field, in the counseling field, practitioners are taught, use empathy, not sympathy. Because how many of you have gone through a tough time and somebody comes and feels sorry for you? Does that really help? Or does that kind of make you mad? When you feel like somebody's looking down on you, or maybe they're just, you know, thinking, oh, what did they do to deserve this? Or I wonder how they caused this, right? Those are some of the things that can accompany sympathy. And that's what makes it different. Empathy is much more comforting because it's relating to their situation. I'm not just feeling sorry for them because they're having a bad day. I'm trying to enter into that experience with them and better understand what's happening, but how they see it and how they feel about it. Pity differs from empathy in that it designates a desire to see someone that's better off, but it doesn't entail that entering into the experience with them. It's more important to try to understand the other person than simply to be sad or to feel sorry for them. One author describes sympathy as two people who do not know how to swim trying to save each other. Instead of saving each other, they'll both likely drown. So instead of understanding someone's experiences, their feelings, we might overwhelm that other person with sympathy. Our own feelings, you know, our own outrage even, can be triggered by a client's story, and that can be counterproductive. And that's a big important factor. If you're trying to empathize with another person, you try to enter into their world, their experience. Yes, they may be hurting. Yes, they may be grieving. They may be sad, but they also might be angry. And we can acknowledge that anger, and we can even understand why they're feeling angry, but we got to make sure that we don't enter into that anger with them and get angry ourselves, because that can, you know, add fuel to a fire. So it's important that we maintain ourselves even as we're relating to somebody else. Don't get me wrong. Sympathy is not inherently bad or wrong. I mentioned a verse earlier from Romans 12:15. Paul says, rejoice with those who rejoice. You know, weep with those who weep. You could say that that's really what sympathizing is all about. Empathy, I think, is maintaining a balance. We love with the heart, our feelings. We also love with our head. You know, we can analyze the situation. We can try to see what's happening and understand how the person is thinking and feeling. We feel with them. But as we see later in our series, true empathy allows us to help others without being overwhelmed ourselves. That's an important aspect to remember. So where does all this leave us? I want to conclude this morning with the implicit directive implicit because the word itself doesn't apply in the New Testament. And yet, as Christians, we are called to empathize with others. You know, empathy, again, it's viewing a situation through another's eyes, feeling as they feel. And while feelings are involved, empathy is not completely or even primarily an emotional action. We're not judging them. We're not looking down on them. We're not getting angry with them or even getting angry at them. And that's an issue. It's an issue you deal with if you get too involved. So where do we find this implicit directive to show empathy? I just mentioned from Romans 12, rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. You know, that goes against the grain, right? In our sin nature, when somebody's rejoicing, sometimes that makes us mad, right? They succeeded and I didn't. Some of you can relate to this. You can find just how empathetic you can be when you play golf, right? Especially if you're playing with somebody else. How do you react when somebody hits a really good shot? Huh? Inside you're like, why couldn't I do that? That's our self nature, you know, especially if you're just a tad bit competitive like some of us are. Right? They're rejoicing. And we're like, Or when their 35-foot putt rolls right to the cup and it either stops half an inch short or it lips out. And inside we're going, ha, 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 right? That's human nature. And Jesus calls us to go against that grain. When they hit that hole in one, we rejoice with them. Even though we've never done it and probably never will. When that putt comes up just short or it lips out, you know, we really feel for them because it's happened to us at one point or another. Instead of thinking inside, about time, we need to be able to really feel how they're feeling at that moment. I know that's a silly example, but I hope it gives you the understanding of what we're talking about here. Paul also wrote in Galatians 6:2, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Now, far from standing in judgment of other people because of the difficulties they're experiencing, we're to get in there and help them carry it. In the original language here, each other is at the beginning of the sentence, putting added emphasis to it. The emphasis here is on the other, it's not even on me. Each other's burdens let us carry is the connotation there. Because we need to be thinking of the other person more than we think of ourselves. And the tense in the verb there for carry, in the Greek, that is a present tense meaning ongoing, keep on carrying each other's burdens. So this isn't just a one-time act. This should be part of the way we live, the way we relate to one another. Notice that the assumption behind this command that we all have burdens, right? And isn't that true? Every human being is going to have burdens from time to time. It's part of our experience. And God does not mean for us to carry them alone. It's a good reminder for a lot of us. We think that, you know, I should be able to carry this myself. I should be able to do it alone. Some think it's a sign of fortitude to not bother other people with their burdens. And such fortitude may be considered brave, but it's more stoic than it is Christian. Human friendship, where we bear one another's burdens, it's part of the purpose of God's plan for his people. So we shouldn't keep our burdens to ourselves, but seek a Christian friend that'll help them bear that burden with us. You know, those burdens can include all sorts of weighty problems. It might be physical, it might be relational, financial, emotional. Believers are to serve like spotters in a gym. If you've ever seen that or experienced that, you know, you've got somebody maybe on the bench press, right? And, you know, they keep adding on a little more weight, a little more weight. Well, you've got somebody standing over them so that in case they get a little too much weight and they can't push it off, there's somebody there to help you lift it up. That's the idea here. Not that you're carrying it for them, but you're carrying it with them. In fact, I think if there's any one word that is key in this idea of empathy, it's with. You're not doing it for, you're not doing it to, you're doing it with. It's a shared experience. Carrying the burden of another can take an unlimited number of forms. Praying with them, making time for them, providing practical assistance if you can. Maybe just providing a listening ear. All those things can be very, very helpful when we show empathy. Now, some of you look down, and if you turn to Galatians 6, you say, I know verse 1, you know, or verse 2 says, carry each other's burdens, this way you'll fulfill the law of Christ. What about verse 5? Verse 5 says, each one should carry his own load. Wait a minute. Didn't he just contradict himself? I thought we were supposed to carry each other's burdens, and now he's saying we should all carry our own load. Different word. The word for burden is a word that means a heavy burden, something that's too much for one person to bear alone. In verse 5, the word load, each should carry his own load, it's a military term, it's a soldier's pack. It's what a soldier was expected to carry into battle. And no one's expected to carry somebody else's pack into battle. So we all carry our own load to the degree that we can. But when those burdens get more than we can bear, that's when we reach out, and that's when other Christians ought to come and help us carry that burden. So there's a distinction in those verses. One last directive this morning comes from Paul's letter to the Colossians. Colossians chapter 3, beginning in verse 12. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Those words in verse 12, compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, they're all necessary ingredients for empathy. Exercising empathy is going to require all of those virtues. And once again, we see the word bear here. In Galatians, it's bear one another's burdens. Here, it's bear with one another. Here, it's not just carrying the load, but putting up with the other person. And let's face it, sometimes that's a challenge. But it's part of empathy. Because again, we're not focused on how they're making me feel. I'm focused on how are they feeling? How can I relate to that? Empathy, like love, is the exact opposite of selfishness. It's the concern for the other person. But it does so in such a way that I try to walk in their shoes. I try to feel and think as they are feeling and thinking at that time. Throughout this month, we're going to see various examples of empathy. We're going to see exercises of empathy that we can employ. I believe this is a very important skill we should sharpen in our own lives. For as the Farmer's Digest once put it, when we put ourselves in another person's place, we're less likely to want to put him in his place. I think that's true. Would you bow with me in prayer? Heavenly Father, we acknowledge the need to exercise empathy because as humans, we are ill-equipped to face life alone. Our struggles can become more than we can bear. And while we know that you are always there for us and with us, sometimes we need that human touch. I pray this morning if there are those who are really struggling and they're just not sure they're going to make it, that they would be able to reach out to a brother or sister in Christ and be very honest. I pray for those of us who may see someone struggling that we could reach out to them, not feeling sorry for them, not in any way being judgmental toward them, but extending your heart to them, understanding where they're at, and helping them along the way. Your son gave us the perfect example of empathy throughout his life, and I pray that we might be like him. And it's in his name that we pray. Amen.